productive, a locomotor, and a sensitive faculty. And these are all powers of the soul. And when Aristotle, in his treatise on the soul, gives his definition of the soul, what is the soul? He says, by soul I mean, by psuche I mean the archezoon, the first principle of living things, the principle according to which a thing, if it is alive, comes to have life. So he's not treating the soul as something beyond the natural. He's treating the soul as a generic term for those processes that are life-giving, life-sustaining, and mediating otherwise such powers and faculties as movement and sensation. Now, given that we have these faculties and powers, there is an inexplicable impulse within us to develop a knowledge of the world, to develop a knowledge, period, a knowledge of things. All men by nature desire to know, in a rather enlarged sense.
And knowing is certainly an extremely powerful dunamis, and one which humans can happily admit to having plenty of access to. It is with knowledge, as well as for the purpose of knowledge, that we conduct our affairs and go about our lives. There's a curious dichotomy in that knowledge creates in us meaning, and at the same time creates in us a desire to find more meaning, to explore, to discover, to destroy as much of our ignorance as we possibly can until we die.
And it would be absolutely useless to think that knowledge ends with some consideration of material composition. This is an almost offhand reply to Democritus and the atomistic theory of reality. It's not enough to say that the ultimate constituents of reality are atomic particles. I mean, that's simply an account of the materiality of the universe. But that surely is a very, very pared-down form of knowledge, and certainly nothing that rises to the level of episteme.
Indeed, with our mental faculties alone, we can travel to faraway places, we can immerse ourselves in cultures and fields, we can witness great events. I myself have spent cumulative years practically living in other places, to the extent that almost every thought that occurred to me was in orbit around this foreign location, while having never stepped foot, in the physical sense, in the place. Australia, Kenya, Parafax, for example.
So let me just mention a few. I don't want to be overly actuarial about this.
The moon is real.
Deimos and Phobos.
Cellophaeus.
The Royal Society of London.
Grope Kant Lane.
Cambridge.
Tokyo.
Ancient Greece.
Valhalla.
Theater in Athens, in Egypt. India, Italy, Sybaris.
Meeches and Morrists around the world.
Place made entirely of the color purple.
Antioch, Jupiter, Tatooine,
Principia,
Arrakis,
Greenland, Flatland, Narnia,
Dimension X,
Wardle,
the Emerald City,
that little place, what's it called again? Oh yes, and so forth. Something that all tourists will know about. Everybody goes to Rome, and it's not long after they land in the airport that they tell the taxi driver, take me to the Piazza Navona, where all Americans will congregate and have very, very expensive cups of coffee, and take a look at Bernini's Fountain of the Rivers. I mean, this is sort of a shrine. You've not been to Rome unless you've sat there, paid those prices, and looked at that rather rhetorical, large, very, very muscular congeries of figures. There are whole books written on all possible worlds. Suppose you came from Mars or somewhere and you're plopped out in the Piazza Navona. In mind, as it were.
Yes, and just like that, even though you're from Mars, you can experience the Piazza Navona or other places.
Just think of a point. The sky's the limit. If I have seen further than other men, it's only because I have stood on the shoulder of giants.
We humans are peculiar. We are a type of
knowledge-gathering, theory-testing entities capable of altering the physical world very much, almost at our own bidding.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's right, DNR.
That's the habit genius has. It makes obvious what had never been thought of before.